Agreed. The Plan Commission considered this at their...
Just as an FYI, our camera back there is being finicky, so this is the camera that's on, just so you're aware. Okay?
Get my goodies out.
Okay. And at 6 p.m. on Tuesday, April 14th, 2026, we'll call the Common Council meeting to order. Let's begin and say the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call, please.
Varga.
Here.
Romano.
Here.
Weigel.
Here.
Bachelman.
Here.
Adamson.
Present.
Going to be the minutes from our last meeting on March 24th. Were there any changes or corrections? Hearing none, I'm going to have a motion to approve.
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Jennifer, seconded by, who was that? Brent. Further discussion? All those in favor show by the usual sign. It is unanimous. Next up, we will open the floor up for public comment. If it's either if it's an agenda item or a non-agenda item, open the floor up for that. Okay. Next up is Columbia City Connect presentation. Ladies or Nikki, whoever wants to come.
Hi, thank you for the opportunity to be here. My name is Nikki Keister, and I'm here to share an update on Columbia City Connect, what we accomplished in 2025 and what we're looking forward to in 2026. Columbia City Connect is a 501c3 nonprofit organization. We are designated through Indiana Main Street and affiliated with the National Main Street Center. That means our work follows a proven nationwide approach to strengthen downtowns through economic development, historic preservation, and community engagement. Columbia City Connect is one of more than 1,600 Main Street communities across the country. All of these communities share a common goal of preserving historic downtowns as an economically vital center of the community. So while our work is local, it's backed by a much larger movement and framework. At the local level, our role is to activate downtown. We focus on creating experiences, supporting businesses, and giving people more reasons to come downtown. 2025 was a year of growth and momentum, and I'd like to share a few highlights that show the impact of that work. I think everybody has had a chance to review the annual report we sent out. One of our standout projects for 2025, and my personal favorite, was Windows into History. The project was funded through grants from Indiana Humanities and Indiana Landmarks, and it brought local history to life through storefront displays. It launched with a walking tour with esteemed local historians as our guide. It received regional attention with WBOI coming out to cover the project, and it was a great example of how we can combine history, storytelling, and walkability to create a meaningful downtown experience. There's still one of the decals on several places around town, but on City Hall right outside. Features our mayor, our very first mayor. We also hosted a steamroller party as part of First Fridays, funded by the Indiana Arts Commission. This was a really unique, large-scale public art experience that drew people in, not just locally, but from outside the community. In May, we introduced the Launchpad, our youth entrepreneurial market. We offered free booth spaces for young families, giving them a chance to sell products, test ideas, and gain real-world experience. We also partnered with the Columbia City Lions Club to grow Wheels of Whitley County. What started as a First Friday feature expanded in 2025 to a standalone event. The growth shows strong community interest and allows us to create a larger economic and tourism impact. Another new event in 2025 was the Flower Crawl. This encouraged people to visit multiple downtown businesses in a fun, interactive way. And finally, we also made progress with downtown wayfinding signage. These signs help visitors better navigate downtown and discover businesses and key locations. Overall, these efforts increased visibility, brought more people downtown, and created new opportunities for engagement. And most importantly, they continue to build momentum for long-term economic vitality. This year, I'm really excited. We had our new initiative, Foodie February, in 2026. It's a month-long event to support local restaurants during a slower time of year, and we had a great response. Over 800 receipts were turned in, and even the Fort Wayne News Channel 15 came out to cover it with multiple live news segments. It's a fun but intentional way to get people dining local. And we're also proud to share that in May, Columbia City Connect was awarded National Main Street status. This recognition reflects the strength and consistency of the work happening here at the local level, from events and business support to historic preservation and community engagement. It means we're meeting national standards in how we approach downtown development. It also helps position Columbia City for additional opportunities, including increased visibility, stronger partnerships, and access to funding and resources that can continue to move our downtown forward. We're also introducing a new event this year in honor of America 250, Star, Stripes, and Symphony, on Thursday, July 2nd. This is designed to be a large-scale community experience that brings people together downtown to celebrate our nation's history through music, performance, and storytelling. The event will feature patriotic musical performances by the Whitco Marching Band, Indian Springs Middle School Choir, a Dixieland Band, and the Whitley County Choir. It will also include civic readings and character performance, including Chair Busco, fifth grade student, reciting the preamble to the Constitution, Harold Company performers presenting the Declaration of Independence, Mrs. Abigail Adams reflecting on the founding of America, and President Abraham Lincoln delivering the Gettysburg Address. At its core, the event is about bringing people together, celebrating our history and our community in a meaningful and memorable way. We've also introduced a new tool called Manage My Market for First Fridays. This helps streamline vendor registration on the back end, making it easier and more efficient to manage events. On the guest side, it allows us to create interactive maps so visitors can easily find vendors, activities, and businesses they're looking for. It's a big step forward for our organization and the event. So at the end of the day, a strong downtown supports strong local businesses, drives economic activity, and builds community pride. And downtown is the heart of Columbia City, and this work helps keep it vibrant and growing. Thank you for your continued support of Columbia City Connect, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Questions for Nikki?
I just want to say thank you for all the work that you're doing.
Thank you.
It's amazing. I know we come down for Fridays, and it's a huge success. And it's attributed to all the work that you all do to put this thing together. Put this thing together. So thank you very much for what you do.
Thank you. It's a group of volunteers, and they're amazing.
Yeah, that's why I was going to say, I think you guys do an outstanding job. And
thank you.
I think it really is remarkable and makes our city and everything that goes on is really, really great. So
thank you.
Any other questions or comments? Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Next up is corrected ordinance 2025-27. Marcia, I don't want to put you on the spot here, but you want to talk a little bit why we're doing corrected ordinance.
Did you want to read it by title?
We can if you'd like to.
That's up to you.
Okay. So can I have a motion to read corrected ordinance number 2025-27 by title only?
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Jennifer, seconded by Tad. Further discussion. All those in favor show by the usual sign. It is unanimous. Please read corrected ordinance 2025-27 by title only.
Corrected ordinance number 2025-27, referencing ordinance number 2025-27, vacation of public way.
Now,
Marcia.
So this was an ordinance not prepared by me, and so I did not realize that the legal description was incorrect. And so I went back and have the correct legal description in here now and addressed a few other little technical things that I thought should be addressed. But the main thing was the legal description. To be positive that was correct and matched with the records. So that's why that is done, and that's why we have that in front of me.
I'll also note that one of the question marks that I think Marcia and I kind of had, even though I had a conversation on the phone with the Ballard's neighbor, Mr. Clifford, we didn't have anything in writing about him effectively waiving his 50%. So anytime we, you know, are going to give a piece of property, property owners on both sides are entitled to 50% of it, right? So I talked to Mr. Clifford just to get his perspective on it. He had said, I want to waive my right, basically, but we didn't have it in writing, so the ballot got that in writing as a part of that as well. So any questions for Marcia about this ordinance, corrected ordinance? We still need two readings on it? I don't care. It's just more of a pass.
I mean, you can do two, or you could
declare an emergency.
Declare an emergency only because they are waiting to move forward and get things done, and they've got things waiting on this, and it has been a while. So, because it went through all the process before it was realized over there that it was a wrong legal. So.
Is there a preference by the council if you want to do it two readings, or you want to declare an emergency and read it?
And we've already voted on it once.
Yeah.
It approved it, so why would we do it again, right? So
just want to make sure. Okay. Okay. Ballards, do you guys have anything else to add besides what you've already said at this point?
No. Just wanted to see if we needed to do anything else.
Okay. Okay. Okay, so hearing that, can I have a motion to declare an emergency and approve ordinance, corrected ordinance 2025-27 on first and final reading?
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Dan, seconded by Jennifer. Further discussion? Tad?
Oh, I'm sorry. I was.
Oh, I thought you had a question.
I was itching trigger finger.
All those in favor, show by the usual sign. And all those opposed? Okay, so Ryan, Tad, Jennifer, Dan approve, and Brent opposes. Thank you. Okay, so now what do the Ballards need to do to move forward?
So this needs to go through and get approved over there.
Over at the county?
Yes,
okay.
Yes, and then the clerk will get that back to them. I think that's probably what your process is. Yeah.
Okay. That clear as mud?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Thank you, guys.
Yeah, thanks.
Okay. Let's see. Okay, thanks. Next up is Ordinance 2026-9, Amendment to the Zoning Classification. Nathan, I'll go ahead and have you come up and describe it first before we read it.
Sure thing. For the record, Nathan Bilger, Planning Director. What this is a rezoning request, 26C REZ3 for 304 North Main Street. It's a request from R1 single family zoning to R2 two family zoning. The applicant is requesting this primarily to allow for a duplex. The house that's been there, that's on the property, has been in existence since, I think, 1880. Probably in the 1940s, as best as we can tell, it was split into multiple apartments up until the most recent previous owner, who used all four apartments essentially as one. By that usage as one functional unit, that removed the grandfathering that it had, the legal nonconformance, as four units. Under R1. The applicant is requesting to change it from up to four units down to two apartments, get the zoning and alignment to allow for that. So effectively, this will go from what used to be four apartments about 10 years ago to two units now as a duplex. The R2 zoning reflects that. R2 also reflects the development standards of the overall area a little bit better. Even though most of the area is single family in terms of use, the actual lots that are there better line up with R2. So if you're looking at this as just this lot, it's primarily for the use. If you're looking at the overall area, it better lines up with the actual lot sizes of the neighborhood. So this does come to you with a unanimous favorable recommendation from the Plan Commission last week. They did have one condition that might be worth exploring more in terms of how we deal with it, whether it's a zoning commitment or whether we let it stand as a condition, and that is that the condition is that it would be for no more than the duplex use. Mm-hmm. So didn't want it to be, again, further carved up with variances or anything like that. So kind of goes without saying, but they wanted to make sure it was very clear in that recommendation. So that's a nutshell of it. If you read the written staff report, I went into way longer detail. You've come to expect that of me now. But this one in particular was deserving of that extra detail. So any questions for me? The applicant is here as well, if you've got questions for them.
Any questions for Nathan?
So it was a multiple, and then it went to single, and now it's double?
So as I understand
it, wanting to go to a double officially. But.
Yeah. So the previous owner, while they used it essentially as one family, they never took out the extra kitchens. They never did anything or did very minimal work to remove the structural component of it being separated out. So the applicant is looking to take out or at least remove the additional units and just take it down to two apartments, so effectively creating a duplex out of it.
Just anecdotally to add, I had done some research on that property via my role as historian, and it was being used as an apartment 40s, 50s, and 60s.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah, the kitchens look like they were probably redone in the 40s.
Okay. I have another question. Yes. So the external is not going to change on the house. It's just what's done inside or
correct
internally to make it usable for two
correct
families.
Parking question came up at the Plan Commission. There are at least 5 paved off-street parking spaces on the site currently. So the minimum parking requirement would be 4. So they meet that requirement too.
So currently there's only one family living there?
I'll let the applicant clarify that, but there should only be one family living there, yes.
So there is?
Yes. I don't know if he has it rented currently. So.
Okay. Any other questions for Nathan? Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Mr. Schrock. Name and address, please.
Elmer Schrock. 0765 West, 050 North, LaGrange, Indiana. Yeah, there's still 3 kitchen intact. There's, I've done over $100,000 worth of expenses on improving it, removing the third meter, took it down to 2 meters. A lot of homes have 2 kitchens, you know, so one of the units would have 2 kitchens. It doesn't make sense for me to rip that out yet and stuff. I brought that old house back to a very nice condition. No one's living there at the moment. A couple of years ago, I tried to sell it. But I had it listed for sale by owner, but yeah, no one, I mean, with an R1 on there as it was, and me having bought it only because it was non-conformed and confirmed that way before I bought it. And then 2 months later, petitions filed by the neighborhood, and they did something they'd never done before in history, and they took it from a non-conform status to an R1. So,
How long have you owned the property now?
Since I bought it in 17, done a tremendous amount of work. It's listed on the MLS. You could see photos and
sure
of the whole house. I spent over $10,000 just in sanding and refinishing the floors and dug up stuff, pull up flooring that, and found nice original hardwood floor under and stuff. So, done a tremendous amount of work to it.
You mentioned something about redoing the wiring in
there. The wiring was redone. Yep. There was a permit pulled in 1997. Where they redid the knob and tube wire to the insulated wiring. There's also work done that was in, I think there was 2008, I saw that there was some work done on it. And I had a home inspection done just in December, and he found nothing wrong with anything as far as electrical, anything like that. Of course, I knew he would point out the roof because there's a few shingles blown off, but there's no leak in the roof, you know. But.
It said you had removed one of the meters. I drove by the other day, and there's still 3 meters up there.
Yeah, the one's not connected. I didn't literally remove the meter, but it's cut off. There's no, the city cut it off. I'm only getting 2 bills now instead of 3. It's been that way.
You're talking about electric meter, right?
Yeah, okay. Electric meter, yeah.
So you've owned it since 2017?
Since 17, yeah.
Yeah. Has it been single family since you've owned it?
Well, a couple months after I bought it. Like I said, I have, you know, yeah. I subpoenaed the hearing of the results on the meeting that we had when the neighbors filed the petition. And, of course, I hired an attorney because there was a lot of lying under oath. And, you know, one claimed that there's still old knob and tube wire there. The council member, you know, this board just took people's word for what it was, I guess. And,
I guess, just so I'm clear, since you've owned it, 2 families haven't lived there since 2017.
Brief moment of about 6 months that there was someone in the back unit when I brought in a family for the front. So there was an overlap a little bit there.
At the beginning?
Yeah.
And then, so after that 6 months, right, let's say 2018.
Yep.
Since 2018, it's mm-hmm. been single family only, and there hasn't been two units rented in the same building. Is that
true? There was a friend of the family that was renting from me that stayed in the back part of it, but the doors were open and they were living as one. The people in the front part were not paying their rent. She wanted to bring in somebody else yet, a friend of hers, to help with her on that, but I collected the rent from her personally instead of relying on the other one in the front, you know.
Other questions, Mr. Truck? Okay, thanks, sir.
I might add one more thing. The house was built for 2 people. It's on 2 lots.
2 families or 2 people?
No, the one house.
Yep.
Was built for 2 families. You know, Dr. Kitchcart built it back in 1880 for him and his butler. So there was 2 separate living quarters. Okay. So from the get-go, it was for two residences. And as far as density goes, that's the only house on that half of the block. On the other half of the block, there's 2 houses. So, I mean, okay. And I poured a parking pad there. First thing I did is to get the vehicles off the street and get them off in the alley. Got a nice big parking pad there and everything. Took down the old carriage barn, took all the lumber home and built another barn with it.
And tried the parking lot's coming off of the alley.
The alley, yes.
It's pretty much parallel with the one across the alley. Mm. So, okay. Thank you.
Yep.
Okay. Public comment. Anybody like to speak? Come on up. Per our council rules, 3 minutes, but if you'd like, you can want me to get 5. Okay. 5 minutes, sir. Okay. And you're on.
Okay. I've lived real close to this house.
Oh, sorry. Name and address. I apologize.
Gary Kesey, 107 East Jefferson Street.
Yes, sir.
And I share a property line with Elmer's house for about 80 feet. But I've been there for over 26 years now, and I've seen a lot of folks come and go. And one of the things that I can say, when it's an owner that's there, well, I'm going to say primary, before Elmer, they took very good care of their place. The renters have not done that and don't normally do it. But I'm pretty pretty persnickety about the yard and how things look all around me. And I'm standing here also representing the people who are immediately around this property on our side of Main Street. And they're not here for some various reasons, work shifts and other things, and a wife in the hospital. So I'm speaking for all of us, but we all want it to stay in our one, a one family unit. And I do have a question. It's about 3,000 square feet. Do any of you think that there could be two families living there sharing 3,000 square feet? That's not very much when it comes down to 1,500. Not much at all. But that's just my opinion on that. But all the neighbors have talked to me about it, and they want it to be basically a one-family unit like all the other houses in our neighborhood. And we all get along very well closely over the past close to 30 years. And we want it to stay that way. To me, there's no common sense involved in wanting to change it to R2 unless it's for the betterment of the neighborhood, for the folks around. Why change it if it's not going to make something better? And I just don't see where it can be better. So that's what, that's our stand on that. And I know that Nathan did talk about the density of the general area of the neighborhood. And I drove around, and a lot of houses are spread out pretty good. But these two great big houses that are close together are really close. And I did submit some pictures, which I'm sure you saw that.
They're in their county.
It's very unusual that houses this big are that close, because the other house next to Elmer's house is about 4,000 square feet. So for the reasons I talked about, is that we really care about our neighborhood. And yes, I've mowed that yard at Elmer's house 100 times when there's been people there that don't take care of it, and they either ask me or I just go do it. Now, that was, I did that myself, so everything looks good. And these things are important to us. And I think the single family dwelling, which it's been for a lot of decades, has served very well and should continue. And I might be wrong, but I thought I heard Elmer say in our last meeting, his intent is to change it to R2 and sell it and leave town. So to me, we're the ones that live here. We're the neighbors. And so I don't see where that's relevant. But that's basically what I have.
Any questions for Mr. Kessler? Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Any other members of the public that would like to speak?
Evening. Kimberly Slusher, 181 North Lexington. I didn't plan on speaking, but just a couple of quick things. Elmer is planning on selling it. I have it listed. As far as it being taken care of before, I had it listed then too. It was not taken care of before. It had to be the last home on my route that day. I had to go home and shower when I was done. When Elmer took over the home, he has turned this home into a beautiful place. Pristine, clean, absolutely gorgeous. 3,000 some square feet. I apologize, I don't remember exactly what it is. The way this home is laid out, easily two families. Multiple entrances, entrances and exits. And having it listed for approximately 5 months, with the way it's set up, it is just not selling the way that it sits. So going back to what it had been is, in my professional opinion, the ideal way for it to go. And as far as what is best for Columbia City, I've lived here most of my life. And I think this would be ideal, whether it's a rental home or a single family. The yard may or may not be taken care of. It doesn't matter whether it's rental or single family. You could have an issue regardless. So that shouldn't be an issue. So in my opinion, that's the direction it should go.
Only question I have is based on what you said, just want to make sure, is the reason that you believe that it's not selling because it's listed at R1 instead of R2? Is that what you're kind of saying?
It is. Okay. That is, I would say, one of the reasons it's not selling, because there are multiple kitchens, there's multiple electric meters on the side. It is set up to have more than one family live in it. So when someone comes in to see it, they immediately think, on the positive, maybe they could have family move in with them and be a multi-generational home. On the negative, we need to go in and take out some of these kitchens.
I just want to make sure I was clear about what you were saying.
Yes, absolutely.
Questions of the council?
From the council.
Okay,
thank you. Any other member of the public like to speak on the matter? Okay. Would you like to talk before we introduce it? Or do you want me to introduce it? And then, or
I did. I'll just make a comment. You know, we looked at this thing week and a half ago, or Monday, and we had a lengthy discussion. We had some really good information and support of explanations from Nathan. He did a great job of explaining it. And I have to admit, I was pretty much on the fence because he brought up some additional information against it because of traffic and alley, kids. You know, and I respect that more than you know, that I supported it back, you know, then. I'm not going to change my opinion now because I kind of stuck my neck out on that. But at the same time, I'm looking at what he said, you know, a 3,000 square foot house, you know, up to two families living in it. My house is less than 1,500 square feet. So I know it's possible. In my opinion, that area was screwed up about 30 years ago because there was four families living in it. Years and years ago, there were four families living in it, and it was still, I don't know if we had proper zoning back in that time period, but it wasn't. So that thing, that area was kind of screwed up for this length of time. We have an opportunity to fix it or leave it as R1. I just have kind of on the fence with it myself. But when I, you know, you reduce that from a four unit down to a two, and we put that in as a recommendation on our motion to leave it at two-unit duplex instead of four. So I respect what they're saying, but at the same time, you know, I personally look at it like they reduced it down to two, and we can control that. And I will admit, renters a lot of times don't take care of the property like they should. So I respect that as well. But we also have a code enforcement officer now that can try to take care of those situations to make sure things are done appropriately. We didn't have that before. So that's why I, back at that time, with all due respect to them, I still supported James Hart. That's just me. I looked at that. I looked at the information that Nathan sent. That's why it was four units in it, you reduced it down to two, but you can't go more than two. And so that's why I supported it at that time. So everybody else can have a look at it.
I don't get a vote in this, but Nathan, the question I keep coming back to her, I'm trying to figure out is as I look at the zoning map of the area that we're looking at here, how is this not spot zoning? I'm not trying to play one side or another. I'm just trying to understand because I know we've had, you know, generally speaking, we've had a consistent policy of we try really hard not to spot zone. So
right.
I just want to make sure that I understand what the Planning Commission's philosophy are on that.
So spot zoning versus a spot of zoning is kind of the question. So spot zoning with negative connotations means that you're giving undue preferential treatment to a particular landowner that you wouldn't give to others in the same condition. Whereas a spot of zoning means there's something particular about a piece of ground that warrants it being treated differently. In this case, I would say that the fact that we have a historic residence on the property might be that distinction. I will also say that we have other similar spots of zoning in the city. In the staff report, I pointed out about three or four, that are similar cases where you've got R3 among R2 or even R1, for example. So it is difficult to make that distinction, but that's how.
Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm. Other comments?
This is one I've kind of struggled with being a staff in the Planning and Building Department. I see a little bit more of this than what some do. And it's in my district. So I've got my neighbors that have concerns, legitimate concerns, of what type of negative effects rezoning like this would take. So I had to kind of stand with my constituents and say, I understand their concerns. But I'm also struggling with what part of these concerns can truly be addressed by zoning. Rezoning this isn't necessarily going to reduce the fact that it could be a rental, because it could be single families that would be a rental. We have renters in there doing their things. I do understand the history of it being a multifamily. My mom lived there in an apartment while she was going to college. I had a really good friend of mine that lived there when we were growing up. So it's
reviewing been, those names was a real, like,
yeah,
assortment of people, yeah, that you know that,
yeah,
are,
yeah, yeah, mom lived there when it was Jack and Irma travel people, and they were like grandma and grandpa, you know, and go visit and all that kind of stuff. So the historic use of that, the concerns that they have with it, the fact that the current owner, in my opinion, didn't seem to follow the rules and stuff that were in place. But again, does ownership have effect on the zoning? So I'm kind of weighing those out and trying to figure out which part of it should have effect on rezoning and what should not be affect the zoning. You know, we have in positions a lot of times where we're looking at things, and yes, everything may not be positive, some of it can be negative, but does it truly have merit in the decision we're making? So with that being said, and my neighbors and area that I live in have concerns about this, weighs pretty heavy in my thought process. Okay.
Anybody else want to say anything before we read? Okay. Motion to read Ordinance 2026-9 by title only.
So moved.
Second. Motion by Jennifer, second by Ted. Further discussion? All those in favor show by the usual sign. It is unanimous. Please read Ordinance 2026-9 by title only.
Ordinance 2026-9, an ordinance amending the zoning classification of certain property from the R1 single family residential district to the R2 two family residential district.
Does anybody want to talk about further than what they already have or additional details?
Can I have time for discussion after vote? May I have time for discussion after vote?
After the vote, we can do whatever you want to do.
Okay.
Okay, so then hearing no discussion, no additional discussion, do I have a motion on Ordinance 2026-9?
Make a motion to accept the ordinance as presented.
Second.
Motion by Dan, seconded by Tad. Further discussion? All those in favor show by the usual sign. Okay, Tad, Jennifer, and Dan approve. All those opposed? Ryan and Brent oppose. Okay, so we'll move that to second reading at the next meeting. Further discussion?
I just want to, if I can address property owner. If carried through, what kind of, and I know we can do the two family restriction, I would like to fulfill that commitment if it carries through. But I would like also to know what kind of actions you were going to take to eliminate it from being, as it is set up now, for three. Even though your meter's turned off, the meter's still located there, so it does have the potential of having three locations in it. What are your plans for eliminating that option from the property?
I'd have to rewire, because the meter is intact, but the box is empty, no breakers. So no one has ever done the work that I've done to that property.
I understand.
I've done a lot of work. I bought it specifically because it was, I received a letter before I bought it. I would not have bought it had I not received the letter that stated, and I have the letter. From
I'm
Nathan.
Familiar.
Yeah. Okay.
I just wanted to know what you were going to do to eliminate
if it did sell, the new homeowner would have to bring in a licensed electrician to rewire to get that box up and running again to connect the meter. I condensed the wiring from the three boxes to two boxes. That meter is still out there, but it there's no need for it. They shut it off.
Well, for this ordinance, you can't put three in. It's limited to two.
Because of the restriction?
Yeah, because of the restrictions we put in the ordinance.
I understand that, but it's R1 now, and he's had two families living. So I want to know from him what his promise is stated, how we're going to eliminate something going further than what it should again.
Well, wouldn't he have to get a permit to hook up a third?
Well, so that I was just thinking that myself is that if there is still a third meter on the property and it is one of our electric meters, then to me the natural reaction should be we need to pull the third electric meter off the house so that it does create a scenario where they have to come and effectively get a permit if they're going to add more. Now, with that being said, you guys can correct me if I'm wrong, but there's nothing that says that you couldn't attach two apartments to one electric meter.
That's
theoretically, right?
And there's probably
and
plenty
Sean's
of
not here to say that.
City that have two
yeah. Oh, I'm sure. Sure there are. Absolutely.
Maybe three, maybe
yeah.
Four.
Well, I mean, we have apartments where you have multiple that are all attached to one meter, and maybe the landlord actually pays the bill and passes on the cost to the three, or maybe it's a scenario where,
I'd say the main reason I voted for it is because you can't have more than two renters in that house.
And his answer,
the Planning Commission.
Don't get me wrong, his answer of the next owner is going to have to deal with that. That's an answer.
So, I
just wanted to know what the plan was.
It's already described in the ordinance. You cannot have more than two owners in there. So that's why that was one of the main reasons I supported it. So it's if you went to three or four other
any other questions? Go ahead. Any other questions, Mr. Trump? Okay. Thank you. Thanks everybody that came. I appreciate that very much in the conversation. Next up is Ordinance 2026-10, and this is another correction. do I have a motion to read Ordinance 2026-10 by title only?
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Tadzik, by Jennifer. Further discussion? All those in favor show the usual sign. It is unanimous. Please read Ordinance 2026-10 by title only.
Ordinance number 2026-10, City of Columbia City, Indiana, an ordinance correcting ordinance number 2026-3, an ordinance amending the rates and charges for the City of Columbia City Municipal Water Utilities.
So I know there's been a lot of conversation. Marcia, okay. Do you want to take
yep.
this?
Yep, so this, okay. is, this should be pretty straightforward, and I do request this be done in emergency because they want to start these on May, just like you had approved originally. Baker Tilly, there was some confusion on the base rate that they were supposed to calculate the minimum rates on, evidently. And so they based it on a rate that was one penny higher to calculate the rates. And so they've gone back and recalculated those rates, as Exhibit A shows. This is just for those minimum rates. All the other rates you passed are correct. So it is one penny less, so we're just correcting it to make sure that it's clear that it's a penny less based upon the correct calculation. So I've been in touch with Baker Tilly, who reached out to me and found the error with Leslie. And so this is how I propose that this be done. And since it's going down, I don't think we need another public hearing or anything else. This is a lower rate. And I just need these minimum rates corrected.
Gotcha.
If that hopefully is sufficient. And I tried to put that in the whereases for explanation as well.
Questions?
I make a motion to approve it.
Have a second?
Second.
Motion by Ryan, seconded by Tad to approve Ordinance 2026-10 on emergency basis, on first and final reading. Okay? Further discussion? All those in favor, show the usual sign. It is unanimous. Thank you. Next up is revised job descriptions. So we've got multiple job descriptions here. The first one is stormwater supervisor. So, Mike, do you want to talk a little bit about what you're doing with the position description? And
well, right now, we have a stormwater supervisor, but in the future, if we would replace him, I'm not concerned that he has a WT3 or a DSL immediately when we hire him, because in that position, I'm actually looking eventually to look for a person that knows how to use every phase of the equipment. I mean, bulldozer.
More of a dirt mover than
somebody that knows what they're doing, knows how to delay water or water main and also storm lines at the level that it's supposed to be and that. So the right now it states that they have to have a WT3 or a DSL. We're stating in here they have to be able to get their WT3 in 5 years and their DSL in 2 years. They have to have it at that time. But we can go ahead and hire them as a stormwater supervisor. And they would be in charge, they wouldn't be in charge of operators when they're doing the operation job or that, but they would be in charge of anybody out on the job site when they're doing stormwater or water main land. With the present description on our other ones, job description, there's no way we could hire someone that's qualified to dig or, you know, and that, because we could never pay them enough. So the way that we could possibly pay them a little more is if we put them in as a stormwater supervisor.
So, Mike, just to be clear, though, the WT3 and the DSL licenses, those are specific for drinking water systems.
Yes.
Not necessarily for stormwater
systems. No, that's for drinking water.
So just so the council understands, that's the delineation of the reason why. Now, it'd be nice to have those.
We want the person to get it, but like if we have someone to put their app in that has the experience in the excavators, the big ones, like we had to rent when we were working on Eagle Park and stuff like that, that we have the guy capable of doing it that has done that in the past.
And can work on stormwater work, too.
Yes, I mean, yes. And what we're looking at is someone who does stormwater work and water both.
Does that change the compensation once they get those?
No.
Wait a minute, though, but there's a range.
There's a range.
Keep in mind, there's a range for every position. So theoretically, yes. I mean, if they're getting more licenses, they're going to bump in inside that range.
Okay. If you just get in that range, it wouldn't be like they would bump
significantly higher.
Yeah.
Because right now, even the people that come in and then they get their WT3 and then they get their DSL, they get bumps with those as well. But yes. Yeah. So it's within the range, though. Any questions for Mike? Okay. Do a motion to approve the position description for stormwater supervisor.
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Brent. Second by, I'll give it to Jennifer. Further discussion? All those in favor show the usual sign. It is unanimous.
Thank you.
Next up is administrative secretary for police. Do you know that?
No.
Oh, okay. Do you want to delay?
Sure.
Okay. You didn't know what's going on. There's also deputy chief on there. How about we move that to the next meeting? Well, I don't care.
Sure.
You tell me. Okay. We'll move that to the next meeting. Okay, then you have a letter from Leslie regarding the utility office department position descriptions. And again, I think she says it well, where a lot of these haven't been updated for over 20 years, so it's probably time to make some adjustments. So in the ones that you have that are highlighted, they have highlights in them, that is the old job description, and the ones that do not have highlights is the new job description.
So would you like to take these individually, or would you like to take them in mass? I don't care. I just give you the preference.
Mass is probably fine.
Yeah. In mass? Okay. Okay. So do I have a motion to approve the head of maintenance, the deputy clerk treasurer, customer service, custodian, accounts payable clerk, bookkeeper, utility billing clerk, and cashier. Take all those under consideration and approve.
It appears to me that we're just taking out some antiquated terminology.
Looks pretty.
Yes. I'm not seeing anything major changes or anything like that.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, with these job descriptions, if there's anything outside of a little bit of wording or things like that, obviously the council needs to get the blessing on it. So that's why it's important.
It all works within the range.
Yes. Yeah, the range doesn't change. The range you approve doesn't change. It's just changing the...
Just looks like language changes.
Yes.
I'm good.
Okay. So is that a motion to approve?
I move.
Seconded by Chad. Further discussion? All those in favor show by the usual sign. It is unanimous. Thank you. Okay. Yes.
That included too?
No, that was just the utility department. So, thank you guys.
Vacuuming carpets.
Okay. Department head reports. Nathan, while you're here, you want to have us give a report?
Yep. So, handful of things. The comprehensive plan should be up for public release for public review tomorrow or Thursday. I think our last executive call is tomorrow.
Yep.
So that will be at the Plan Commission for public hearing, formal public hearing at their May meeting. Walmart, their new pickup addition, which is about 4,000 square feet, was permitted a couple weeks ago. So that's going to be kind of a to-do up on the northeast corner of Walmart.
I'm sorry, say that again, because I don't know that I know about this.
Walmart is adding a dedicated pickup area rather than having pickup out front.
Grocery pickup. My immediate thought went to truck pickup. And I was like, wait a minute, Walmart selling pickup trucks? Okay, I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm with you now. I'm good. Okay.
They're being built in Warsaw. And you can, yeah, okay. Anyway,
gotcha.
Grocery pickup. So all of the pickup only spaces out front are getting shifted to the north side of the auto area. Mm-hmm. So lots of stuff happening there over the next few months. Five Below was permitted for a remodel at the old Family Dollar, so that's forthcoming. We had three different minor plats at the Plan Commission. Thank you. They're all minor plats. Perhaps most notable are three lots over on 200 East, on the east side of 200 East, across from what will hopefully be the Bluffs at Cider Mill, which is the big major plat. So this is in the same area, same developer, but different market. And then finally, Nikki didn't mention it when she was presenting, but there is a historic walking tour that the museum and Columbia City Connect are putting on the first Saturday of May, so that'd be the second at 10 o'clock at the Courthouse Square. Route is different from last year. The route is going to go northward along Chauncey Street up to Smith & Sons and over to Smith & Sons. They've been gracious enough to give tours of their building itself. And then from that point on, it'll continue on down south on Main Street and have two routes. One will be shorter, basically go to the courthouse, and the other will go on down to the river itself and check out buildings along Main Street. So last year was great weather. I hope for the same this year. As Brent can attest, I've been out giving impromptu tours to practice as well. So hopefully have a good turnout.
Question, Nathan. Thank you. Mike.
Like I said earlier, that we have flushed hydrants in town. We've got one area yet to do, and it's out at the around the high school, which we will do Thursday evening. We'll come in the evening to do it so we don't interrupt the school with groundwater or possibly low pressure, which we've done before. Also, one of my employees, Ethan Sievers, passed both his DSL and WT3 this last week. So we got another one. It's an operator now.
Great. Question the mic. Thank you.
Yep.
I want to first thank the street department, electric department for the trees. I know neither one are here, so please pass that along to them. We hit a little lull with some bad weather, but we're getting back at it. I think we only have a couple left to take down. Going to take a little wind from Tad Sale, and the RFP for the jail was approved, so hopefully we'll be moving that off of our utility poles here soon. I think the mayor might have told you, but we did receive word that we've got community crossings to finish up Westgate Phase 3, and Columbus State Connect doing a downtown cleanup from 9 to 11 Saturday morning.
Questions of Chip? Thank you. Matt?
We had some issues with the flooding that came about. We had to shut off the grinder pumps, the sewer injections, so we had to close the bathrooms for a couple days. We're getting the fields back in shape for this weekend. We have our first tournament of the year with OnTurf. They're going to be using pre-fields. We're getting a pool drain so we can retile. The gentleman's going to be up, supposed to be this week, probably be next week now, to fix those tiles that have fallen off. We lost an employee last week, so now we're down two. And we had a part-time mower, had some health issues over the weekend, so we're not real sure. We may have to be in the mode to look for another part-time mower. We're getting the dog park started. As of yesterday, they came out and staked where the posts were going to be, and we're hoping to have that up and going real quick. April 25th is our opening day for the kids. They'll start at 5 and 6, and they'll walk, parade down to fields 1 through 4, and there'll be a bouncy house and an obstacle course for the kids to play in, so the parents will stay a little bit longer, and just kind of have the kids will be holding their sponsored banners on the way down. So we're trying to bring back what we had a few years ago before COVID.
Cool. Questions on that? Just be clear, the employee that you lost went to a different department, correct?
Correct.
Yes.
Okay. They didn't know.
No, that one did not have the health issues.
Yes, yes. Questions on that? Thank you. Terry?
So we finished working on the Tantalus move from REMC to the Tantalus Cloud, so that's completed for utilities. Working with Sean and SOS to install some door controllers and cell phone boosters at the MSF. I'm also working with Toby Fraley from the Fire Department SOS to get some APs, access points in the Fire Department, cloud gateway and PoE switch, and connected to a dedicated surf internet connection for their training room.
Questions of Terry?
Can you use any more acronyms? You've got a POS and the AOP or down there with the ABT.
I did not say POS.
Point of sale, by the way, is POS. Point of sale.
That's what I meant.
Yes, I know. Mike.
Ed Marble Brothers Inn, and they brought their belt press in, and we're running about 600,000 gallons through that. To make arrangements for my staff, could change some valves out on site, the tank, decant valves. I've got one of those done. Weather dependent, so we haven't got the other ones changed out yet. Fire monitoring test, we were halfway through it. Had perfect test running, and the last sample was lost by the shipper and never made it to the lab, so we're restarting that test next week. So hopefully that goes well.
Where's the mic? Thank you. Tom?
Everybody's aware that we had 107, our ladder truck, back down in Indianapolis for waterway repair. I got a phone call today. It's been down there for a couple weeks. Got a phone call today. The one part that needs a waterway, the end piece on the waterway and the swivel. swivel loan's $24,000, but in light of what these guys are talking about and the money that it takes to run their department, I don't feel so bad about the 24 grand. I do, actually, but 24 grand for a swivel on our waterway, it's craziness where we're at in today's world. But we really have no choice. We'll have to get it fixed, so we'll figure it out. And then, go ahead, Dan, I'm sorry.
I could say when a truck costs $1 million, I suppose.
And a ladder is going to cost you two plus. Mm-hmm. The mayor and I spoke about this just late last week, I think it was, about the cost of repairing this. I had a ballpark that was much lower than this. But you really have no choice. What are you going to do? Spend the $2 million, get a new one every time it breaks? You're going to have to repair it. So anyway, I'll keep you posted as we move forward. But just the one part is $24,000, and I about died today.
Questions of Tom? Thank you. GP?
First of all, I want to apologize about missing the office here. When you mentioned Gina, I didn't think we changed anything in hers. I don't see any changes there, so it threw me off a little bit.
Yeah.
And there's this one small change in Chris's, but I'm going to get with Beth this week and then make sure there's.
It's okay. I was going to say. Okay.
So, anyways, I apologize for that. Officer Jans and Officer Benwell are currently in a solo phase of field training. As I've reported before, they're progressing well. They should be completed with the FTO by the end of this month, which will give us two guys on the road again, help covering shifts and more manpower. Looking forward to that. Officer Gardner, Officer Blocker, and Officer Didion are in their 15th week at the academy. They were scheduled to graduate on the 24th, which is next Friday. Looking forward to having them back. Officer Garman has already been through his FTO, so he's got a little over a year on now. So he should be able to come back, pop right in after maybe a quick refresher. So it gives us three guys back on the road, Blocker and Diddy, and go into the FTO phase, which is field training.
Thank you. Appreciate the clarification.
We co-hosted a basic car scene training for law enforcement with the county and with the county sheriff's department and the Indiana Criminal Justice Institute. The training went very well. It was at no cost to the city. We also hosted several interns with the county consolidated schools and with dispatch and police. We continue to get strong students from that program. They're coming through and they're going to be enjoying it. Hopefully they start reaping some of the benefits. This is telecommunication week for dispatch, so I want to give them a little prop. We appreciate all of our dispatchers. They always like to tell us where to go. So.
Questions? Gary?
I just want to say I'm excited that after our interviews with our two potential police officers that we listened to last week, I'm pretty excited to see them be part of our force. Hopefully they agree to everything. You know, that was fun to be a part of that. So,
yeah. Two really good individuals, I think. So. Yeah. Any other questions? Comments? Thank you. Marcia?
Nothing.
Sal?
Nothing.
A couple of things for your information. We are working on lots of different projects. As you heard, we had a great meeting this afternoon with our insurance broker, I guess, which is Gibson. We're doing well with our plan. We're running below cost right now. Things are going fairly smoothly, knock on wood, so that's good. We did have a meeting, Chip and I had a meeting with Carl Seiler from Redevelopment Commission. Again, I'm going to steal some of Tad's thunder, hopefully not too much, but soil remediation, he's just going to pitch everything. Soil remediation stuff regarding Smith Brothers property. We're working on that, which is, I think we're getting some good headway. Interesting scenario this past week. I just wanted to let you be aware of. We had two people submit street closures for the Veterans Marathon. We had two people that wanted to take on Veterans Marathon. Gary and I met with both individuals. We're kind of Switzerland in this whole deal because it's not our race. We just kind of support it. But both applications kind of came in on the same day, It was a lot of weird circumstances. So we reached out to Joanne Bird and had asked her, like, hey, here's what we've gotten. What's your thoughts? And she said, you need to go with this person. So because we're giving them the paperwork and the website and Sam's helping and blah, blah, blah. So it made the decision a little bit easier for us, but it was a weird situation we shouldn't have been a part of anyways, but we were. So just wanted to give you, if you ever hear about it, again, I think we've gotten that squared away, but just wanted to let you know about that. US 30 stuff, just to kind of give you a heads up about that. Of course, you probably, if you've gone to Fort Wayne, you've seen lots of work being done on US 30 over there, over in Fort Wayne, Allen County. We haven't gotten any additional, let's say, plans for US 30 through Columbia City, but I will say that I have heard rumbles of PennDOT planning a median U-turn, J-turn at State Road 5 in Larville. That's just, I heard that, I think, over the last week or two, so that's interesting. Kudos, though, to PennDOT on, they got the curving around our pedestrian island on Main Street fixed this week, which was very quick compared to what I thought it was going to be, but they got out there and got it fixed, which is great. Their plows hit it this winter. You probably saw big chunks of concrete out of it, our brand new pedestrian island. But they got it fixed, and I think they're going to put up maybe some posts or something to kind of make sure that their plows don't hit that in the future. So that'll be helpful. Let's see, what else do I need to let you know about? Downtown plan group, if you will, our PER that we're working on. We have that meeting coming up on Monday. Administrative Professionals Day is on Tuesday, so thanks to all of our administrative professionals, but especially my assistant Ashley. And again, lots of things happening, but appreciate all your work. Jennifer.
Okay, I have two things. Obviously, the Arts Commission is supporting several different activities in the community this year. One of those being the Fine Arts Program at Columbia City High School. And as such, we'd like to promote the CCHS Fine Arts is presenting Radium Girls this Friday and Saturday at 7:30. And if you buy your tickets online now, they have a very neat setup that they have where you actually pick your spots.
Mm.
So you get assigned seats.
Yes.
If you buy them now until 10 o'clock on Friday, they're $10 and they're $15 after that.
Oh, okay.
So definitely buy them.
50% more if you...
Yeah. And then we are kind of working a bit with the Woodley County America 250 Committee. And we're sponsoring a mural project. We're sponsoring a whole county project, but we're kind of doing our own thing in the Columbia City part of it. There will be information about that on our Columbia City Arts Commission Facebook page. We're putting out a request for proposal to local artists who might want to complete the piece. It's going to be a, instead of a mural that's on a wall, it's going to be like a traveling mural that's going to be on canvas. And to make sure that all of the canvases are the same, we're buying them for Columbia City, South Woodley, and Tierra, so that they're a unified collection. How the other communities decide to do the program is kind of up to them. But here we will be selecting an artist who submitted a proposal for what they want to do to represent the pursuit of happiness.
Okay.
There's life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness in Columbia City. So there will be a financial stipend to the artist who's selected for that. We will want proposals by the end of this month, and we'll make a decision at the beginning of next month, ultimately, so that we have finished art ready for the 4th of July.
And how are you guys pushing that out?
It'll be all over.
Okay. Cool. That'll be coming out soon?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, probably tomorrow.
Okay. Very cool. Thank you. Tad.
Well, I had a whole dog and pony show planned, but Chip and the mayor took them.
I know, I'm sorry. So sorry.
You the Frisbee dogs. So I'll just talk about the LML building. It's finally, the tests have been approved. That we've been, this has been going on for 10 years that I've been on
a long EDC. Time, that's what it is.
This has been ongoing, so now it's approved. They just signed some paperwork so we know which... the delineation of areas that where things can structures can be put up. So that's been a long process. So I can't take any credit for it. I'm just reporting, right? Chip did all the work.
No, so. Don't give Chip any more credit.
So how soon until there could be potential development?
So there's another property adjacent to it that we're working on right now, the Smith property, and part of that used to be part of the city. We're working on that because it's probably more attractive of a property if those are loose together. So we're weighing those decisions. So it could be soon, but it may be more attractive to bundle those two together.
Clean up the other property and make the package deal, or at least get the option of a combination of those or something like that.
So we're kind of waiting to hear some stuff on that.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dan.
I just want to let you know that down by the JRB with the BLR, we got that connected. I personally thanked him earlier, but I think it deserves a public with the BP gas leak and how that affected the street that I'm on. I was involved in many conversations with neighbors as well as Mr. LaRue. Talked to one of the gentlemen the other day that was affected pretty significantly.
Sure.
And thanked me. Thanks, Tom. Tom handled it fantastic. So thank you for taking care of our people, going the extra step. So.
Yep.
Okay.
Thank you for
sharing. A lot of credit to Toby.
And one more thing. I did witness Nathan walking around the courthouse backwards.
So did I.
Yeah, you saw him.
I told you to trip him.
Yeah, I tried to tackle him.
Was there a glitch in the Matrix? He was like being...
No, he was practicing for his historic tour.
Oh.
And we were walking for health, and he decided to join us walking backwards.
Okay.
And it was quite impressive.
What time is the tour?
10 o'clock.
10.
Sorry. Thank you. Ryan. Okay. Last thing I'll say, I forgot to mention this. I don't know if we've talked about the must meetings. So this is a new concoction by the legislature to get us to talk about income tax things among the different units. So must stands for Municipal Unit Strategic Task Force. And what we're supposed to do is we're supposed to meet this year, and we're supposed to talk about income tax amount and percentage and how it's going to be distributed and all that kind of fun stuff. I only bring that up to say I got an email yesterday, I think, from our county auditor who's trying to kind of arrange these meetings. By statute, if you will, it does call out that the fiscal bodies can, you know, are a part of it. They can appoint people to come to these meetings that obviously other officials will be invited and things like that, but ultimately the fiscal body is the, let's say, vote caster, even though there's not an official what we're supposed to be casting our vote for. It's supposed to just force us all to discuss and talk about what we're going to do about income taxes going in the future, knowing that the legislature has now capped what our percentage can be and that we all have to pass our own, or we can go into the county's rate. There's lots and lots and lots. I just say that to say, probably at the next meeting, I'd like to have a little bit more of a conversation about that. I can send more information about the must meetings, MUST, but I just want to give you the first salvo, if you will, that is coming, that we are going to have to at least have a conversation. The answer may be we all disagree. It may be some of us agree, but some of us don't. Not us, meaning us as in all of the municipal units within with the county. But I just wanted to kind of let you know that that's coming down the pipe at some point. They're going to probably try to start scheduling that in the near future. But I will send you more information. I just wanted to make sure it was on your radar of how you will want to handle that. Leslie will obviously be a part of that. county auditor will be a part of that, court treasurers from other units will be a part of that, and in some way, shape, or form for the council, I will certainly be there in some way, shape, or form. So just wanted to let you know that's coming down the pipe. With that, any other questions, comments, concerns? For the good of the cause. We will call the meeting adjourned. Thank you.